Welcome to another edition of the Saxo Market Call podcast. As always, I am your host and my name is Søren Otto. Today it is Tuesday and therefore I am joined here in the studio by my good colleague Peter Garnery, who is our equity expert, and that is mainly what we're going to talk about today. We're also going to talk a little bit about macro because, unfortunately, as you probably noticed, we didn't come out with a macro episode yesterday because Charu was unfortunately unable to participate. But I don't know if we should say luckily, but at least this week seems to be a relatively slow week on macro figures. So I think we'll get everything covered today. But first things first, I want to introduce you, Peter. Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm doing great. Hi, Søren.
Hi. It's a short week here in Denmark, so obviously we're almost halfway towards weekend, and you're going to Iceland, which will be quite nice.
Yeah, thanks.
So now we got to get this expedited, and while there might not be that much to talk about macro-wise, there's still some earnings season stuff that we should touch upon, but let's just start on the bigger scale. Macro, what's your take on the economy right now and sort of the financial world? You talked to me about this two-way economy or something like that.
Yeah, two lane economy with basically a fast and a slow lane. I think it's a very good picture to explain what is going on in the economy, because on its surface it looks pretty okay, right? Mm-hmm. You know, wages are growing faster than inflation right now. We've had a reacceleration of inflation, but we have real earnings growth or wage growth for consumers. In aggregate terms, we don't have a big issue in credit, either on the corporate or the household sector. That's also what the credit spreads are showing. But there are pockets where you have delinquencies on new serious credit cards, etc., are exploding higher, mimicking a little bit of what we have seen in previous recessions. We had that repricing last week where you had a little bit of weak economic data coming in from the U.S., had a full rate cut coming into the US market, with the market now pricing the Fed to cut the interest rate for the first time in September, so ahead of the election in November. Mm-hmm.
And that was among other things due to a pretty weak non-farm payroll on Friday, right?
That as well. Yeah. So I think that this two-lane way of looking at the economy explains pretty well why the Fed is still hesitant. And explains a lot of things, because surely, I mean, it would be no problem, sir, and I could go back to the Bloomberg terminal. I could very easily give you 20 charts that will show you that the economy is not going as well as the equity market would suggest. Mm-hmm. But then equally, I could very easily find a lot of indicators that are suggesting why things are going great. And some of the things that I think, before I go to that point, so the two-lane framework is explained by this. So you definitely have segments of the US and the European economy that are not doing well, both on the corporate and the consumer side. The issue we have right now is that those slow lane parts of the economy are not doing bad enough to outweigh the momentum and the strength of the fast lane part of the economy. And you see these cracks in the economy in some areas of housing, as I said, credit card delinquencies. You have some of these very cheap dollar stores in the U.S. that have stock price performance wise not done very well. So you have all these indications of that. But then on the other hand, just to mention a few, you have an equity market that's very close to an all-time high. You have credit spreads that are still compressed. You have the Dallas Weekly Economic Index for the U.S. that has gone up over the past couple of weeks. We still at around estimated 2% real GDP growth. The Eurocoin real-time GDP estimator in Europe is at the highest in more than 18 months and have gone back into positive territory. You have PMIs, especially in the service sector, that are still looking strong. Wage growth is looking strong. China has improved considerably. Whether it's real this time will tell. And then one of the sectors of the economy that has a very pro-cyclical nature to it is the shipping industry. And Solactive, which is one of the index providers, just like MSCI, they have this global shipping index, and there's around 50 different shipping companies in that index. And it's people will immediately, oh, Peter, is it just containers? No, it's containers, it's tankers, it's bulk. So that's dry good like wheat and grain and iron ore, etc. You have LNG ships in there. You have a lot of different things in the global, even ships that are transporting around cars. if you look at that index, it is at an all-time high. And if you look at the index over the past couple of weeks, it's actually gone up and up and up and up. And I'm actually paraphrasing or quoting Tor Svellan, which is one of the best performing, as far as I know, and I've met him personally years back in London. He came from Trafigura and Goldman Sachs. He started his own commodity hedge fund, and he was recently on a podcast, I think the Top Traders podcast, and he said as well that the shipping industry is very key to look at because of its procyclicality, but also because it turns very fast in the cycle. You saw that the shipping industry was actually in a very rapid decline weeks before the rest of the world figured out, oh shit, there is a, sorry my French, but there is a pandemic coming, right? Yeah. And as he says, an all-time high shipping index just doesn't rhyme with an economy that is falling into a recession anytime soon.
And when we talk about these two lanes, and obviously that's probably also the reason why I think it's a very good way of explaining this doubt that there's been of these. We had this major expectation of 7 rate cuts earlier in the year. Now it's been slashed, and now we added an expected rate cut. And obviously that kind of shows that the Fed doesn't really know which leg to stand on. But is it fair to say that these two legs are sort of split between like big quality companies and then probably smaller companies? I don't know if that's the split, but I'm just curious, and I just want to rephrase. You recently put out an article about quality companies, and in that we can see that the outperformance relative to the market is quite significant. So I'm just curious, in a market like this, whether quality is probably the ones that are performing the best.
Yeah, I think, I mean, history shows, and I think that's also one of the lessons that Warren Buffett learned during the 1970s, is that when you have an uncertain macro environment and uncertainty on inflation and the policy rate of interest rates or the monetary policy, you know, access to capital and access to large markets and having a strong brand and competitive advantage, you can measure that in different ways, is a must. And that's also why I think quality companies this time around, this cycle, have done extremely well. That's also why we wrote about it. It is an important one, and I think you can see it as well. I mean, the small caps have not done particularly well relative to the mega caps. So I think there is definitely an access to capital angle to that. And yeah, so that's definitely important.
All right, let's move on to earnings, because that is still, I guess we're sort of just across the middle, and we have probably peaked, but we still have some pretty big companies coming out. I think we have Disney today, which is obviously a big company. What else to pay attention to? What are you picking up, and what are you looking at?
Yeah, so we have a pretty big day tomorrow, actually. We have Airbnb, we have Uber, we have Arm Holdings. I think Arm Holdings, from a technology perspective, is super important, especially because of the last quarter. Arm Holdings, which is, you know, keep in mind, it's this UK company that holds some of the most important patents and IP rights to, you know, chips in general in the global economy. And they in the previous quarter they were sounding very optimistic. They raised their outlook and forecast because of this whole generative AI. And it's one of those companies where, I know, if we ought to continue paying these very high premiums for AI stocks, we need a company like Arm Holdings to, you know, reiterate that positive outlook, because as we, you know, AMD that we talked about, which was a premiere or an introduction to the Nvidia results we'll get later in this season, disappointed on the outlook, right? But if we look at the overall earnings season, I think it's fair to say that, you know, the earnings we have got have been quite good, especially on earnings. We've had an 8 percentage point surprise to the upside on earnings, almost 2 percentage point upside surprise to revenue. And that's the positive part, that we actually are able to exceed the revenue expectations for US companies. So that's very positive. And we are more than 80% through the earnings season. I think the conclusion is there to stand. It has been a good earnings season. Mm-hmm. I think there is definitely enough. There's enough evidence, there's enough good outlooks in the current earnings season to justify where we are right now. Having said that, and that's what I wrote yesterday in my note to clients, is that if you look at the realized earnings, yes, in the two previous quarters, we have seen some positive momentum, but we also came back on falling falling earnings more than a year back because, you know, the technology sector was under pressure. And then they cut the cost and we got the rebound in 23 and here we are. So, but if you look over a year, even 1.5 year, we have actually flat realized earnings and equity markets are going higher. So that tells you, Søren, that a lot of the rally we have seen in equities is really predicated on very high expectations that earnings will continue to rise and will just be around the corner. And the big key risk here is that, and that's what I also write in that note, is that if you look at the profit margins or the operating margins, it's a better measure. It is still historically high, it's above the average, and it's actually trending down a little bit. So all companies in the global economy are facing these headwinds from input cost on their margins. And it just means that to sustain bottom line profit growth when you have when you're facing headwinds on your margins, it just takes some wind out of your revenue growth. So whether that could be a surprise later this year for the equity market and investors, well, time will tell. But that's just something to have on the radar at least.
And I think this idea that the expectations have are really high and that there doesn't have to be a lot of news for investors to be spooked. I'm thinking of a company like Novo when we're talking about quality companies. That is definitely one of them here in Europe, the biggest company in Europe, which actually came out with a pretty good earnings, but because of some potential added competition, the stock actually fell upon release of the earnings, right?
Exactly. That's a very good example, and that is just what you have to live with. If you're an investor in some of these high quality companies, but even in the case where you have a very high equity valuation, what does that reflect? Well, the only way you can square a high equity valuation with the future is that a lot of the value will come from future growth, right? So that is what is baked into a high equity valuation, and I think we've just seen it. Just last night, Palantir, which is one of the more held technology stocks among Saxo clients, tumbled 8% in extended trading, and they actually lifted their revenue guidance, right? And normally, when we have that type of event, you would see a positive share price reaction, but we didn't get that from Palantir. The investors were actually disappointed because the guidance they gave and the raise just moved the revenue. Their revenue expectations to where the market already was. Oh, no, not where the market was, where analysts were on their expectations, but the market was clearly expecting more. So
yeah, and I mean, that is obviously the case. And I guess that's also why these quality companies it's more or less for everybody, but it's very much for the long-term investors and maybe not as much the speculative short-term traders.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly, because the quality companies will generate the attractive returns through compounding over a long horizon, and as you also know, Søren, compounding takes quite a while to kick in, and that's also why the quality companies are interesting, because you can acquire shares in a company and then hopefully it's a quality company, and we talk about that in that note to clients that it's not that difficult to identify a quality company today. The difficulty is that around half of all quality companies today will fall out of the high quality category within 3 years.
Yeah.
So, and you can get great returns, almost twice the market returns, if you can identify that half of the bucket that maintains the highest quality stamp. So that's the big issue. And I think actually, Sean, maybe we should talk about just coming to my mind when we talk about quality. I mean, we had over the weekend the annual meeting for Berkshire Hathaway shareholders, and it was the first one without Charlie Munger, the late Charlie Munger, and so Warren Buffett was not alone on the stage, but he was alone in terms of the two man rock band that those two have been for so many decades. And there's a lot of takeaways. He was a little bit skeptical on AI, but also thought there were a lot of opportunities to it, etc. He was talking, he was praising Apple a lot. But the key thing I took away was that he said Japan has probably a lot of untapped potential still, despite, and we've talked about it in several podcasts this year, Son, that it's been a phenomenal rally in Japan, and especially because of the geopolitical risk and, you know, the sort of the tensions between China and the US. But then he mentioned India. There was a question about India. And he said, well, Berkshire had one previous investment in India, but then they ended up divesting. And he was not sure whether Berkshire Hathaway had the skills or capabilities to actually pursue it, but he was very sure that there would be I can't remember the exact wording, but like it would be a country of enormous opportunities for investors. He was very sure of that. But I just had this feeling. There's a little bit of a hint with his comment on Japan. We know Berkshire Hathaway have invested in Nubank, which is this digital first bank out of Brazil in South America, which is doing extremely well. And now he talks about India. I just get this feeling that when he's not here any longer, Berkshire Hathaway has two options. So if they maintain with their mainly US exposure profile on the balance sheet that they have today, they cannot deliver alpha. They will just be some, they'll just be, it'll still be a great conglomerate, an investment company, but it will never make any alpha. And most likely it will fade over time, and then probably will be broken up over time into its pieces. That's my prediction long term. Or the management team that takes over after Warren Buffett is not here any longer will pivot Berkshire Hathaway to become a global giant, a private global giant in an holding company that will go head to head with the sovereign wealth states. And Warren Buffett is not the one for that task, as he also indicated, but it could be for a new management team. And I think it's super interesting because the emerging markets, and we're actually writing a co-authored note on emerging markets because there are some countries in the emerging markets that are super interesting and hold long-term potential.
Definitely, and also some where you might be a little bit more skeptical. But it is, I mean, Berkshire Hathaway is always an interesting company to follow because it just, I mean, there's just this aura around Warren Buffett, and everyone is looking to him for guidance in the financial market. So it will be super interesting to follow their trajectory towards that. But Peter, I think I've reached the end of my notes here. As I said, it is. On the macro figures, it is a pretty slow week, but we still have these earnings coming up, so there's a lot to pay attention to there. Is there anything I've forgotten that you think we should touch upon before we go?
No, I think we touched on macro, earnings, and Berkshire. That was a nice three key points there.
That is a nice trio for sure. But Peter, thank you so much for coming and making us all a little bit smarter today.
Thank you.
I should say that this is going to be the last episode this week because we have a short week here in Denmark. I will be putting out an episode that you and John Hardy, the former host of this podcast, did about the US election, which is coming out a little bit later this week. And otherwise, we'll be back next week. And apart from that, on behalf of Peter Garnery, the Saxo Market Call podcast, everybody here at Saxo, thank you so much for listening, and until we listen to each other again, happy trading.